I'm here to talk to you about this outage trend analysis, Google. We also call it the Insights Program because we're trying to gain insights from the incidents that we're inevitably forced to experience. So first, a little bit about me. I'm a program manager. I'm actually pretty new to Google. I've been there for about a year. Actually, Wednesday is my Googleversary. And before that, I was in San Diego working at wireless software and systems companies, mostly startups, but a few big companies as well, Qualcomm being one of them. And I thought I'd mention a few relevant outside interests that I have. So I have a master's in organization and development. What that means to me is that I like to think about how teams are performing and how that's contributing to the success of the business. And that people and teams really matter in how we get things done. Also, I consider myself a quantified selfer. What that means is I like to measure things about myself so that I can learn more about how to make my life better, my health better, that sort of thing. And there's also a book and principle called How to Measure Anything. And what that means to me is that you can have some imperfect data and still learn something from that data. And that's kind of a little bit about what I've done with this program. I also want to mention, if you want to interrupt with questions, I'm happy to answer questions in the middle. And all the data you'll see is fabricated, so keep that in mind. So not only am I kind of new to Google, I'm a little bit new to SRE. So I come from mostly a development background and more, you know, kind of smaller scale products. So to me, when I started, I was thinking, oh, you know, it's going to look something like this, right? You know, you've got production changes, you've got software changes, user behavior, it's all in this mix. But those of us in SRE now realize that this is actually what it looks like. It's a little bit chaotic. You've got a lot of people making changes and communicating and different services interacting with each other. So what my program is trying to do is trying to look for a signal in that noise. So here's our process in a nutshell. We sort of have a feedback loop. We go through a goal question metric exercise. We collect data, organize the data, analyze the data, and then throughout, we're socializing the data with the organization. The reality, though, it's not a waterfall. We're not, you know, just doing our goals in the beginning, and then, you know, it's not this sort of process that we follow step by step. We're doing more iterations, right? So we're defining goals and then doing some measurements, putting some charts together, and then going back to the goals and ask ourselves, are we measuring the right thing? So the reality is the effort involved has really looked more like this. And so I'll take you through each of these phases. So starting with goal question metric. This is a metrics definition methodology. Originally, it came from the software world, but it's really quite generic and applies throughout. So a lot of times when you're looking at metrics, you might decide, okay, you know, I want to measure how long it takes to resolve something, how many user visible issues are we experiencing, et cetera. But the goal question metric methodology really forces you to ask yourself, okay, what is the organization's goal? What are we actually trying to achieve? And then the questions are, okay, what questions do we need to answer to tell us, are we meeting that goal? And then once you have that, it actually helps you uncover more data and more metrics that you might use to help you answer the questions. And this is a real goal question metric that we used in our program at the beginning to sort of ask ourselves, okay, what is important for us to capture so that we can see if we're getting our best-in-class incident resolution times. Here's another example. So we want to make sure teams are learning from these issues and improving their processes. We've talked a lot about the blameless postmortem process, and that's definitely a big part of our culture. So we want to make sure, are the postmortems capturing all of the details? Are teams learning from each other? And are we cutting any corners in how we're resolving incidents? And is that actually causing us more trouble? And here are some of the metrics that we're using to measure our ability to reach this goal. So from here, we started collecting data. And we use any available source of information. So we look at all the internal communications. We look at our IRC logs. The bug tracking system has a lot of information. We even look at what our customers are saying, because we often want to hear from them and find out what's most impacting them. We have incident tracking tools that we use internally. We even go out to social media and see how much pain is this issue maybe causing our users. And of course, postmortems, right? That's at the end of the day, we should be capturing as much information in the postmortem as we possibly can. And we'll also look at the press articles, again, to sort of put ourselves in the shoes of our users and see what they're experiencing. So once you have all this disparate sources of information, how do you organize it in a way that makes sense? So we defined certain categories of data, and we started moving information into these different categories so that we could organize all this information. And then from there, because it was quick and easy, we actually are using Google Sheets to organize the information. And given some of the automation capabilities of Google Sheets, we were able to automate importing data from email, importing data from documentation, from docs, and actually build a schema right there in Google Sheets. And the analysis and charting is all baked right in. All right, so now the fun part. So I'll take you through several areas of analysis that we conducted once we had all this information. So incident timeline. So you'll remember I said, okay, we want to have best-in-class incident times. But there's challenges, and I'm sure many of you have experienced these challenges. So unless you have people working graveyard shifts, you likely have your SREs are in multiple time zones. So of course, you've got people speaking in different time zone languages, right? So you've got PST, you've got GMT, you've got Asia time zones, etc. It's a big challenge for us. Also, there's many different tools that you might be pulling timestamps from, and they're using different formats for their timing. Also, certain incidents could have multiple phases, right? So how do you measure, you know, impact phase number one, impact phase two, impact phase three, and how do you actually do anything meaningful with that at this sort of high level? So we've solved this, well, it might not be fair to say we've solved it. We've really simplified our timeline for the purposes of this analysis across multiple teams. And it's really just the beginning, but we look at three different timestamps, and it actually tells us a lot about how we're performing. So we look at when did the incident start, when did we detect and escalate the incident, and when did the incident end? And we pretty much just capture those simple three timestamps and use them to do analysis. What that's allowed us to do is we can actually look at different teams and compare them to each other. Now, we're not trying to beat any team over the head with saying, you know, and institute this sibling rivalry and peer pressure. But it actually tells us if certain teams are actually doing a superior job of resolving their incidents quickly, and maybe they have best practices that they want to share with their colleagues. What this has also revealed is that certain teams have more challenging contexts that they have to deal with when they're resolving an incident or an escalation. Some teams have geopolitical issues or legal connotations that it just extends how long an incident might take to resolve. So root cause analysis. This is a very critical part of our blameless postmortems, but it also has a lot of challenges. For any of you who have had to write a postmortem, you know what I'm talking about. So how deep do you go? So there's a famous method called the five whys method. It's actually very easy to use, but at what point do you stop asking yourself why, right? So how do you know how deep to go with your root cause analysis? Also, we're trying to categorize many different teams into the same root cause categories so that we can do analysis across them. How do you get different teams to agree on what to call these root causes? And then what do you do with what boils down to just a human error? Someone just, you know, made a dumb mistake, something like that. And what do you do with that? So I'm going to walk us through a little example just to show the first challenge, so root cause depth. Okay, so in this example, we lost some data from our data center. Why did that happen? Well, the data center lost power because the substation went down. Why did the substation go down? A bird landed in the transformer and shorted the whole thing out and took down power to the entire data center. Okay, so let's do a little root cause analysis. So why did we lose data? Well, data center lost power, the bird landed in the substation. Why did he do that? He was cold. Okay, well, there's not too much we can do about that, but we can maybe prevent the birds from landing in the substation by putting up some bird repellent. So that's, you know, a pretty simplistic way to look at a root cause analysis. But if you really want to go deep and actionable and actually improve the resilience of your systems, you want to go deeper. So why did this power loss result in data loss? Well, we didn't multi-home the data. Why didn't you do that? Well, maybe we didn't know the data was that important. Okay, well, we should ask why, and so on and so forth. So you can really keep going deeper, but you really want to get to that place where you can design an action plan that will prevent that from happening again, and also instill this culture of increasing stability and reliability. So for starters, we had sort of a short list of high-level root cause categories. But we quickly realized that some of these categories were really just too big. So we broke them down even further. So under capacity, we have memory and CPU, bandwidth, et cetera. Under deployment planning, we have, you know, planned production changes, dependencies, software, and so on. And from this, we can actually do a simple chart of the frequency of the root causes across these teams. And we can look at the subcategories as well. So one of the questions I get often when I talk about this data is, well, what's the difference between workflow, uncaught mistakes in code, and a software problem? So I'll illustrate that with an example. So a software engineer writes code like this. And, you know, it's your classic assignment operator instead of comparison operator bug. Well, guess what? It was code reviewed, and someone said, looks good to me. And so in this case, we would actually mark both a software logic problem and an uncaught mistake in code. That way, in our system, we can do trends and look for the collections of data that had an uncaught mistake in code root cause category. This happens pretty often, but it allows us to do analysis across all of these categories. We can also track improvements. So if we put a fixed initiative in place, we can actually look at our data over time and see, okay, did the fix that we designed actually do anything? Did it actually change our trends at all? Next, we took a look at incident severity. So this also has some challenges, and how do you measure this across these large teams that have very different behaviors, different customers, different users? So one team might think that, you know, a service going down for 2 minutes is a critical, you know, burning issue, right? But another team might not think that's such a big deal. So how do you normalize the severity across the teams? Also, when you use severity, you want to make sure that you're highlighting what the real signal is, like what are the really impactful incidents. And so you have to have a good way to normalize that across all of these teams. You have limited time and resources to spend on certain issues. So if something really critical comes up, with a lot of user impact, you want to make sure you know it as soon as possible so that you can apply the right SRE resources to resolve it. On the flip side, you might have many small impacts that are just boiling up and you're getting more and more each week. And so you want to make sure you see those as well. And also, there may be squeaky wheels in your organization, and they want to get all the attention, they want to get all the fixes, and so that can be another challenge, is that if you don't have a way to measure severity of incidents, then, you know, management or teams don't know where to put their time and energy. So we solved that by coming up with a multidimensional system for assessing severity of an incident. So I think there's about 15 or 16 different parameters here. So we look at each incident and we ask ourselves, which of these flags should we set for this incident? And this has allowed us to really compare, you know, an incident coming from our ads team to our Gmail team and sort of compare their relative severity. What that's allowed us to do is, I mean, naturally, we can do a very simple distribution of incidents across these different flags. We can also correlate these flags to the root causes that I talked about earlier. This has been quite revealing, actually. We can kind of see, okay, what kind of root causes are more likely to cause a particular type of impact. But it's also allowed us to combine those flags into perspectives. So we can ask ourselves, okay, we're public relations, we're putting our users first. Which of these incidents would be our worst, putting the user last incident, for example? Finance, they're important as well. So which incidents would they most want to look at and most want to ensure that the root causes for those are actually getting the attention? Likewise with quality, which I guess is very critical to SREs. So this is system stability, cascading issues, memory management, things like that. So it's basically this underlying infrastructure. Are we improving in quality over time? So now that we have all this data, what are we going to do with it, right? We just don't necessarily want to look at some charts and call it a day. So we want to try and fix it. So if we're seeing a trend that we're not happy about, we want to work with the team managers and decide, okay, what fix initiatives are we going to put in place? But there's challenges. Change fatigue. If you've ever been on a team where it seems like management keeps implementing, let's implement this tool and see if that fixes our problem, or let's change the organization or change this workflow. So that feeling of like, I can't take any more change, is called change fatigue. So you got to watch out for that when you're doing these fix initiatives, because your engineers can get a little tired of it. Sufficient time. So you want to make sure that if you have put in place a fix initiative, that you give it enough time to have an impact on the data. You have limited resources. You don't want to spread them too thin and try and fix everything. You want to be very deliberate and intentional about which fixes you're going to apply your limited resources to. Cause and effect. So you need to have some way to know if a fix you put in place is actually having the effects you want, or maybe it's some, side effect of some other activity that's going on. The power of measurements. And so this one is kind of near and dear to my heart, because what they say is that if you just measure it, then you'll start to see improvements. Heightening awareness of these common root causes, I've kind of already seen it. We've been presenting this data now for a few months, and you can already hear people talking about, okay, we need to work on, our memory, our capacity memory problems, because guess what? That came up in our data as one of our common causes, for example. So it's already becoming part of the consciousness of the organization where our biggest areas for improvement are. So without even putting in any fix initiatives. Development teams, they're seeing this data and they're reacting and responding to the data as well. So we've organized our fix initiatives by looking at our incident timeline. So we definitely want to stop all of the root causes as many as reasonable. But, you know, it's software. Things are going to happen. You can't prevent every single software bug. So let's look at where it's hitting production. And can we stop the triggers from actually allowing that code to get into production in the first place? Like maybe there's some throttling mechanisms we can put in place at that point. We also are looking to detect, escalate, and mitigate issues faster. So we focus our fix initiatives there as well. And then we're always trying to cultivate this prevent and fix culture by improving action item resolution after a postmortem, making sure that things are closed out, sharing information from postmortems across teams, really cultivating that sort of improvement orientation. So I thought I'd share a few lessons learned from the program in case any of you were interested in starting up one of your own. I'll start with what doesn't work. Excessive manual effort. So when I started about a year ago, I was naive enough to start doing all this work, but there was actually quite a bit of manual effort. I was reading a lot of postmortems and trying to pull the data out manually. So I automated as much as I could using the Google Apps Script and Google Docs and Sheets capabilities, and came up to speed on that very quickly, and it's worked out really, really well. Single point of failure. So right now, I'm doing a lot of the analysis, but and in the beginning, I was doing a lot of it, and that made me sort of a single point of failure. And it's, hasn't allowed me to do more, so we're working on sharding out the work, crowdsourcing the work, getting the SREs who are writing the postmortem to actually tag and catalog this information themselves so that then it can be in the data set right from the get-go. And teams can do their own analysis. You don't want to make assumptions about what the data is going to tell you. It's tempting because, especially when you have so much experience with your systems, you might already know where the biggest bottlenecks are or what the most common root causes are. And this, I think, was sort of an advantage for me because I was new. I didn't have a lot of preconceived notions about what the data would tell me. And so I was really just trying to act as a messenger, right? So I tried to leave my own judgment out of it and my own bias and just collect the information and then just spit it out in chart form and actually show it to management. And there were some surprises in the data. For example, some people thought that there would be a correlation between a root cause and an impact, right? And it wasn't there. It wasn't in the data. So you might be surprised by what you might find once you're doing analysis across such a large set. Also, again, maybe because I come from a developer world, I was thinking about things from as many perspectives as I could, not just SRE, and that has been really valuable. I mean, a lot of teams across Google are interested in this data now so that they can learn about incident management, because incident management is not just about the SRE response, but you may have to bring PR involved. You may be bringing developers involved. And so by making this data kind of more of a global, you know, whole life cycle approach to the incident, the data has become really relevant and interesting across the whole organization, which has been really great to see. So what works? Engage your stakeholders. And in my case, you know, we had a few managers and senior folks who were wanting this data, but a lot of folks throughout the organization sort of emerged, right? You might run into them in the break room and just have a conversation, and all of a sudden they become a stakeholder, and they're like, oh, I would love to see what's happening with, the privacy incidents or data integrity incidents, and they become your stakeholders. Socialize it. So we do a weekly report, and that has garnered a lot of interest. So we tell folks what's going on a weekly basis. And then we do quarterly reports with the roll-up metrics, and we look at how we're doing over time and seeing the improvements. You want to use intention for the reasons I mentioned earlier. So when you're designing a fix initiative, it's important to be intentional and to choose the things that are going to affect your trends in a positive direction. But you also need to measure them at the end of the day and make sure they're actually having the effect you want. Use readily available tools. We could have spent a lot of time trying to build new tools to do this. I think it would have slowed us down, though. And in the beginning, when you're just getting set up, you want to be very agile and iterative and really, when you're looking at your goal question metric, you want to leave space to, change your schema as you go along. And, the schema is important, but, we didn't get locked in, right? So if we wanted to change how we saved a field from, a freeform text and now, okay, it's a comma delimited list of preset values, we had that freedom because we were just doing it with sheets. So that really worked out for us in the beginning. We're now at the point where we're ready to stabilize our schema and move on to the next thing. And that's my talk. Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions? Questions?
You added more sophistication to the data you collected around events.
Mm-hmm.
How much effort did you put in going back to the historical backlog of years of events,
mm-hmm.
and trying to get that same sophisticated data from older events?
Not very much.
Yeah. So just started from today and
went
forward.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to go back in time and recreate this data for all the years before, but the effort it would take is, I would need more folks to join my team.
Okay, thanks.
I think, okay, go ahead.
Can you give a couple of concrete examples on what are the actions you can draw from those data other than the actions they've already laid out in the postmortem?
Sure. So what I've done is I've done a lot of reading of postmortems, and in each case, they're doing a design of how do we prevent a situation like this. But when you start looking at like 3, 4, 5, 10 postmortem, however many, and they all maybe have some similar signatures, like maybe configs are getting pushed too freely, like maybe we don't have the right workflow in place to review config files, or we need pre-parsers for config files, things like that. It's those kind of things that you'll see when you look at, many incidents together and look for those trends. So that's one example. Better monitoring comes up as well. So, yeah.
Do you do any second order analysis on the actual process that you're talking about here? So not just what failed to cause a problem, but how we attacked the problem. So do you actually look at what worked across problems and feed that back?
We have not done that yet. We're pretty early in the program, so we're actually now at this point where we're automating a lot of the work that's been done manually, and that should free us up to do more second-order analysis, and even pull in more data, because we want to actually pull in more data to our systems for analysis. So we can do more predictive type work. Yeah, yeah. So that's sort of the next frontier.
Thank you. The talk was very interesting.
Good.
On curiosity, the gathering the data, the analysis, what size team did you start with? What size team do you have now? Just in terms of if I wanted to implement this in my own company,
yeah.
What size team would I be looking at?
So it started with me and half of one other person to start with. Luckily for me, my other half It has many years' experience at Google, and so because I was also coming up to speed on the infrastructure, I had to be educated as I went along. So we actually started pretty small. I think that works to a certain extent, as long as you can, as long as the person can sort of tolerate reading through all of this material. I really am looking forward to crowdsourcing and sharding this analysis work out to like the whole team, right? Because, you know, I don't necessarily have to say, oh, the root cause was, you know, a deployment planning production change request, right? Like the person writing the postmortem can do that for me. So you can do it, but it is a little labor intensive.
Thanks, great talk. So when you talk about socializing the data that you've gathered here, how do you decide what's the like appropriate granularity for that? Are you sending it out to the like entire org, certain teams, certain individuals? Like what's that process look like?
A little bit of both. So Google has a very open culture and environment. So I did a tech talk with the data a couple of weeks ago, and it's been shared out to all Googlers. So they all have access to the information. In addition, certain teams have seen like this sort of top-level analysis, and they say, oh, you know, I want the same thing just sliced by my team. And so we give it to them. So we either give them sandbox access to our data set so they can do their own charts and their own analysis, or in some cases, if we're feeling especially generous, we'll actually do a report just for them based on just their incidents. Yeah.
This is related to the socialization question, but mm-hmm. Do you leave it to teams to look at that data themselves and decide how to improve, or do you take this data to some other like authority figure that makes sure these teams get better, or does this go down to the SREs themselves? Like what is the audience for this, and how does it actually result in improvement for these teams?
Yeah, so in the beginning, it was more like top-down driven approach, meaning management knew that we were having more outages than we wanted, or MTTR was a big deal. And so they wanted to do this analysis so they knew, okay, where are we gonna look to find this? So it was kind of top down. And we closed the loop with them and we said, okay, we presented the data just to management and the senior technical leads, and we said, okay, here's the data, here's our suggestion on what we can do to fix these particular areas, like the trends that we found. And then we let the management chime in and say, okay, well, we think we want to do this one. We've already got some resources here. Let's keep going on that. You know, and so there was this feedback with them, or this meeting that we had with them. So that's one way. But when I gave the tech talk, I actually had engineering teams, development engineering teams, come to me and say, oh, you know, you just proved my point for me about, you know, this particular problem we're having in this one development team. You know, and we're going to try and fix it, and can you just give us your data so that I can show my manager and prove my point, right? So it's kind of both, actually. It is a lot of work to do all the socialization, so, having some way to just sort of push it out to a dashboard, that's actually where we're also going, so that it's not so, you know, they have to request it and I have to respond, right? It's just a self-service sort of thing.
I have another question, if you don't mind. Uh-huh. Once you've automated all this data gathering and presentation so that you don't have to do it manually, what's the next step for that program manager role? Where do you see that evolving as you continue to grow their ability to deliver this stuff?
Right. Well, I'll speak for myself. Like, I'm hopefully working myself out of a job a little bit. What I'd like to do is go more into this predictive analysis, like someone mentioned. I'd like to pull in more information, in particular, velocity. Like, I'd like to look at, you know, our metrics as compared to velocity and make sure we're on the right trend for number of incidents versus velocity. So that's an area. But so more like advanced analysis for the bigger data set.
You're thinking velocity in terms of development?
Yeah.
Velocity? Okay. So getting better at that as you improve your reliability?
Exactly, yeah. Because so far it's been mostly, okay, here's our timeline, right? But you know, you don't want to necessarily, you know, eliminate all outages, because that means you might not be making improvements in your system. And so what's the right level of incidents per feature released, right? I don't know the answer, but you know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So the last part of the process is the action items.
Mm-hmm.
How do you sort of, I guess, follow up on those, or do you federate them out to the teams and hope that they are accountable to themselves? Is there any sort of accountability on that?
So I've been mainly a messenger, but one of the messages that I'm sharing with teams is that follow-up on action items is one of the most challenging parts of doing a postmortem. And maybe your experience has been the same, meaning, you know, you've got these requirements to deliver a postmortem within 24 hours. You can dream up a lot of improvements to do to your system in that 24-hour period. They're probably things you've already been thinking about, right? So you put them down in your postmortem, and you're like, okay, check, I've got the postmortem done. It's not really done, right? Because you have all these action items that are waiting to be resolved, and it's tricky because, you know, resolving those action items might actually destabilize your entire system, right? And so somewhere in the planning process, you actually need to ask yourself, okay, let's look across all of these postmortems and all the action items that are coming out of them and actually design the right architecture to fix all of these systemic issues. And that's what we're working on now, is this system to look across action items across all these postmortems.
Do you actually track like a metric that's, you know, sort of number of action items completed for a given postmortem?
Yes. Okay. I couldn't include everything here, sure. But yeah, we did actually do a deep dive into a selection of postmortems to see how we're doing in resolving the action items. And we classified action items into monitoring improvements, better failure mechanisms, fixing the issue at hand, process improvements, things like that. So we could actually look at how are we doing at fixing different types of action items that are coming out of postmortems. Yeah.
I'm glad you have this slide up.
Yeah.
Why do you define the incident duration to go all the way to resolve instead of just mitigate?
In some cases, we may mitigate user impact, but there might still be some residual impacts that are not necessarily mitigated by whatever short-term fix we've done.
Okay, so if you just rolled the code back, would you consider that the end of the incident?
Yes, we would. Okay. It's the end of the user impact. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.